Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General James Clapper, Air Force retired, Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And also joining us in our conversation is John Kaminsky. Well, General, President Bush signed the U.S. Intelligence Reform Bill into law in December of 2004. Could you tell us about what some of the key provisions are and how this bill affects NGA?
Well, this is no question the most profound piece of legislation affecting the intelligence community since the National Security Act of 1947. And I think the most profound feature of it, frankly, is the separation of what had been the Director of Central Intelligence from being dual-hatted as both the DCI as well as the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. The DNI, as he will be called, assuming Ambassador Negroponte is confirmed, will be presiding over all the agencies, to include the CIA. So that the implications of that, I think, are quite profound, and we're not actually going to know until we actually start doing this. There's a lot of analysis going on right now of the legislation, which I personally think is interesting, but it isn't going to be terribly informative. I think the real test here is going to be the first acts of the DNI. That is, what he does and says the first hour, first day, first week, first month, first year, because that will be huge in terms of the precedence that will be set on how this position is actually going to perform and what it's actually going to do. So I think we're in a watch this space mode, frankly, as to how this all turns out and how this evolves. And of course, it's going to be very interesting. As far as our agency is concerned, what I have told the workforce is that it's my belief that what we do is so vital, so important to our users, our consumers, that I don't see, at least initially, a whole lot of change as a direct result of the onset of the DNI. I'm sure there will be changes, but I think the basic mission and that we perform will continue.
Some say that a small revolution is underway in the intelligence service. For the first time, the National Security Agency experts are working with analysts at NGA. What were the drivers for these two agencies to join forces now, and how are the National Security Agency and NGA working closer together than any intelligence organizations in history?
Well, John, that's a great question, and I appreciate getting it because I think this has been a good news story. It's not been heralded too much. Obviously, all the intelligence community have been impelled by the tragedy of 9/11. There have been, even before the legislation, a lot of changes for the good in the intelligence community. General Hayden, who is the director of the National Security Agency and is the nominee to be the deputy director of National Intelligence, and I are long associates and colleagues who've known each other for many years. I served on the NSA advisory board for 4 years while I was retired. And I basically grew up in the NSA system, had a couple of assignments there, and I'm pretty familiar with NSA. So when I came to NEMA, now NGA, I was frankly struck by the parallels and similarities between the two agencies. We basically operate in the same time zone, yet we don't compete. We are very complementary in what we do. And so it was almost a natural fit for the two agencies to get together and collaborate. So we've done a lot in terms of exchanging hostages, if you will. We are in each other's footprint big time. We have senior executives that we have exchanged in each agency, which is a tremendous experience for them and for both the agencies. So can't go into the details here because of classification, but suffice to say that we have put a lot of emphasis on bringing together our two disciplines, geospatial intelligence and signal intelligence, at the pointy end of the stick, if you will, been particularly applicable and particularly successful in the global war on terrorism. So to me, this is a great success story.
Well, you and former CIA Director George Tenet and former NSA Director Michael Hayden commented together that speed and agility is the key to the war on terrorism, not more levels of bureaucracy in Washington. How are intelligence agencies speeding up this workflow?
One thing we are doing, everyone is in the intelligence community, but particularly NSA and NGA, is putting representatives, experts from each of our agencies in the field with the forces pursuing the terrorists in the global war on terrorism. This has been, a tremendous success as well. There's no substitute for having our experts right there with the operators, with the warfighters, enduring the same privations, the same challenges, and most importantly, understanding the exact mission. And there is time sensitivity involved here, and so we empower our folks who are forward deployed with the warfighters to draw on or reach back to the home agencies for whatever support is needed. So we've had to build up a cadre of deployers to sustain this presence. But there really isn't any substitute for having them out there embedded in the decision loop, which can't come back to the Beltway and then back out there. They have to be a part of that process. And all the intelligence community members, all the agencies are involved in rendering that sort of direct support up close and personal.
What are some of the challenges and sort of what's being done to overcome them?
Well, one of the challenges that we have is, of course, sustaining these deployments. It's one thing when the first emergency happens, but then when you get into the period where you get into the regime of sustaining these deployments for months and months, now years at a time, and what we've done is raise a cadre of deployers that we train and equip, and they're all civilians who volunteer to do this. And, of course, we compensate them extra for that. But, teach them how to fire an M16 and drive a Humvee and do all these other things that military people need to do, because that's the environment they need to operate in. So they get their shots up to date and their wills up to date and all that. And then we deploy them. And that's a challenge. There is the challenge of communications, staying connected, particularly in the business of imagery, which is widely known as a voracious bandwidth eater of communications. It takes a lot of communications capacity to move imagery around. So that's always a challenge, the connectivity. We have people in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other garden spots like that, and staying connected with them in such a way that we can respond to their needs, keep them equipped, keep them supported, is a big challenge. And then, of course, having to do that in a secure mode and complying with security policies and the like. So those are all some challenges that we're working and, by and large, I think, pretty successful at overcoming.
Many intelligence agencies express a need for more intelligence analysts. How is NGA approaching its planning on recruiting, training, and retaining employees?
We, like the rest of the intelligence community, are on the upslope. We were on a downslope personnel-wise prior to 9/11, and of course that has occasioned a growth spurt for us. And so all of us are out recruiting, and I think it speaks well of the patriotism of our citizenry, and particularly our young people, because we are, all of us collectively, have thousands of resumes, applicants who want to come to work for us, which of course is good because we can, be selective. The mode we're in right now is, of course, problems we have is there is a clearance requirement, background investigations and this sort of thing. And so we have people in the pipeline, and sometimes these clearances can take a long time. So we have the challenge of staying connected with our applicants, hopefully keeping them interested in what we offer to them. So we are bringing in hundreds of people right now, which poses a real strain on our pipeline, particularly training And what we've had to do is set up a mentoring system where every new employee, particularly new analyst, is assigned a more experienced member of the analytic cadre to sort of show them the ropes. And so we're having to do this, and of course we have to continue our day-to-day mission. So that is a daunting challenge. But I've been on the obverse of that, where you're trying to reduce the workforce, and frankly, I'd rather be in the mode we're in today.
In the first segment, when you were describing your team, you talked about the significant contribution of contractors. How is NGA working with contractors and making that link between business and government?
Well, this is something that affected me. The 6 years that I was out of the government and in the industry, and I worked as a contractor for the intelligence community, so I had that dimension. And I learned a lot from that experience, and that, frankly, has influenced me and the agency accordingly. So we like to think that we're very contractor-friendly. My definition of what is what I would call the sacred trust of the government has actually gotten much smaller since I was a contractor, because there's a lot of work that contractors can and do for us. In fact, if all the contractors didn't come to work tomorrow, we would be out of business. We are that dependent on them. They are a part of us. I have tried to promote as much teamwork between and among government and contractor as possible, acknowledging, though, that we, the government, have a fiduciary and contractual oversight responsibility to ensure that what the contractors do meets the specifications of the contract. One of the things... processes I've established is what we call an interaction program, industry interaction program, which is rather formalized. But what it is designed to do is to offer a contractor who has something to offer, something they want to show, they want to demonstrate, they want to brief us on. So we have a dedicated staff to systematically bring these people in and ensure that they are exposed to the right parts of the NGA staff. And then we'll help them, if we, to the extent that we can, apply what they might have to offer if it is something that we need. So since half our workforce are contractor full-time equivalents, this is a hugely important segment of our workforce.
That's interesting about that formal interaction. What does the future hold for NGA? We'll ask General Clapper, its director, for his perspective as our conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.